Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with the Man City Show podcast. In the studio with me, Nigel Rothman and Dave Hodgson. What a delight it is to welcome Dave back. Not only did he pass a fitness test to be in the studio with us tonight, but he finally joins us, because last week, Dave, I'm sure you listened, I'm sure you're aware, it was just Nigel, and it was a painful 60 minutes. I can't lie, Dave.
I can only apologise to you, your listeners, and, you know, most of all, Nigel.
It is the Man City Fan Show, and as always, not only will we hear from Nigel and Dave, you can be part of the show tonight. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. You can have your citizen say what a show we have for you, because we'll be talking about the success in the League Cup, City reaching the final for the third season in a row. Didn't win the game, won the tie overall. Quite an extraordinary set of circumstance there. And then we'll be talking about the game against Spurs yesterday. City seemingly having 500 million chances and then allowing Spurs to have two chances and score goals in the craziest game that maybe you've seen for quite some time. And then what a delight for us here at Love Sport Radio, because John Stapleton, a legendary broadcaster and, of course, City fan, is joining us. And then we'll look towards the game on the weekend with the Hammers. And Hayden Smith-Shepherd will be joining us, because the winter break doesn't start for City this weekend. It is the week after. Nigel, good to see you again, once again in the studio. And once again, I have to say, your fashion choice, your dress sense, but this time a beautiful City shirt. But from what I'm hearing, it's not having the required effect.
Well, I love this shirt, Charlie. It is a special edition 125th anniversary shirt, sky blue, sort of the old-fashioned round neck, sort of taking us back to the 70s with the round badge on the left-hand side. No sponsorship, and it was a special birthday present from my family. And sadly, I've only worn it twice at games. Yesterday at Tottenham Hotspur, and in midweek at the Etihad against Stretford. And it's played 2-1 none. So, you know, you have kind of superstitions, and you think, do I wear it again? Do I burn it? So I'm not sure.
Well, it's weird, because at times like this, we do a show like this, Dave, we look for reasons why. We look to dissect what is going on with City. And actually, I thought of you earlier, Dave. This is before I knew you was on the show. We need to talk about, and you've mentioned it at length, City not being clinical enough this season. Guardiola has spoken about it. But maybe that's by the by, and it's Nigel's choice of shirt.
I think whilst, you know, I don't think anyone would question, you know, the power of Nigel's shirt to influence, you know, the situations around him. I think the point about us being clinical, it's a difficult one, because I always remember I used to console myself, or, you know, chastise the team in days gone by, when Manchester City would show up and, you know, they might, you know, we might not score, but we create a chance and be, oh, you know, nothing's broken because we're creating chances. Or, you know, if we're not creating chances and not scoring, you know, everything's broken, you know, we're going down, all those kind of things. This, at the moment, we are creating those chances. There are, I think, tactical reasons you can point to as to why we are not putting chances away, and particularly not putting chances in the way we have done in the past. I would be more worried if I was sat here and teams have worked out how to stifle us out of possession, not let us get shots in on goal, you know, all our shots were off target or something like that. That's not what we're seeing. There is something here that's not quite right, but there's a lot about it that's working as well. So is this a, you know, throw your hands up in the air, you know, the apocalypse is nigh? It's not. There are certain reasons why we're not putting the ball in the back of the net as many times. And as I've also said before, what's worrying me more is that we're offering so few chances to oppositions, but to the opposition, but they're getting taken. That's the big issue we've got now. It's not just the fact that we're not taking chances, and that will come. We've got the players who can. It's the fact that we're letting the ones in that we do give away.
Yeah, quite surprising. Obviously, we'll look to the game with Man United first. Obviously, the League Cup second leg. United not having many chances. City having 8 or 9. United score from their first one. I know that was a similar story with Spurs on the weekend. Maybe that is the bigger picture we need to look at, as David refers to. But on that game, it was very hard for the players. They were 3-1 up. I don't want to say they were cruising, Nigel, by any means, but we all kind of maybe refer to the tie being won from that first leg. But United, seemingly at the minute, they get a result at the Etihad, winning in the league in early December, now getting the victory here.
Yeah, I think you've made the point already, Charlie. It wasn't 0-0 before the game started. I think that was a major factor. Going into that game, knowing we were 3-1 up, I wonder whether we would have had the team selection we had. I wonder whether City would have gone into the game with the attitude they had as well. Listen, as I always do, credit to the Reds. You know, they did the usual stuff of soaking up the pressure, hitting us on the break. No surprise there, really. We did miss chances, a hatful of chances. We had 2 goals disallowed. But I think the thing that surprised me actually was the way we set up, because the way Pep set us up sort of defensively, it was very, very strange. We had a situation where we had Walker, Cancelo and Otamendi as a back three, and then we kind of had Rodri, who was kind of just sat in front of them and sort of made it a back four at times as well. It just felt and seemed really weird. And it's this whole issue of Pep kind of tinkering is probably an unfair word, but sort of changing the formation, changing the side, not having a settled 11, is something a number of City fans are starting to talk about. Now, I recognise we're playing in 4 competitions and we need to rotate, but he does seem to experiment quite a lot. And going back to what I said to start with, maybe it's because we had that 3-1 advantage, it kind of didn't matter. We could get away with that, and if it didn't work, we were never probably going to lose the tie. But it did put us under extra pressure, and it was disappointing, and it was frustrating as a City fan. You never like to lose to them, even though you could argue, well, we haven't lost because we're going to Wembley again, and they're not.
See, this is the issue for me. I was in some ways quite happy to see that Pep had made the necessary innovations for facing a team like Manchester United, who I would say are at one of their lowest creative points of any Manchester United team I've ever seen, that I've ever seen. And what they have been tending to do is hit you with pace. So, you know, Cancelo and Mendy both being positioned in that back three is a concession to the fact that you need quicker players to get involved there. Maybe in the league we'd be more inclined to play Walker if we didn't have, you know, that advantage going in. What worried me is Nicolas Otamendi looks a liability when he's got a centre-back partner. When he's on his own, he is so exploitable. And I think, you know, the moment of that game that particularly sticks out for me is Kevin De Bruyne absolutely screaming, Nico, you know, when he gives this foul away at the edge of a box, you know, like an 18-year-old rookie centre-half who's had a rush of blood. And, you know, it's clear that he does these kind of things. And, you know, you sometimes feel like Fernandinho is maybe a more calming influence. Your company certainly was for him. I just saw that and thought, oh my God, if you've got Otamendi basically playing on his own as a centre-half for chunks of this game, we're going to be, you know, sixes and sevens here.
Yeah, well, De Bruyne, that clip obviously went viral after. I think everyone used it. I'm sure it'll be used in GIFs all around the country when everyone wants to say no to a certain thing that their friend has texted them or tweeted them. And Fernandinho, who Dave mentioned there, obviously signing a contract extension as well. We must mention that. On that, Nigel, on what Dave's talking about, is there a worry? I mean, you mentioned that the game was won. It was 3-1, maybe a different tie altogether if it's 0-0. Is there a worry that we're not, I don't want to say we're providing excuses, but maybe somewhat we're papering over the cracks. Is there a larger problem here?
Well, let's talk about the problem that you talk about. Here is a team who currently hold 4 trophies. It won every single domestic trophy just, you know, less than 12 months ago. Mm. We're sitting second in the Premier League, and we're likely to finish probably second in the Premier League to a Liverpool side who, frankly, no one can touch them. We've scored more goals than any other team in Europe so far this year. So we are scoring goals, let's not forget that. We're in the final of a cup competition. We're progressing in the other cup competition, and we're still in the Champions League. So all is not wrong here. And OK, we have lost a tie, but still got through that semi-final. And we've lost away to Spurs in what was a bizarre game, having total domination and not taking our chance. And so you know, making this kind of sound as though there's a major crisis going on, there is not. There are some issues. It's an ageing squad. Sterling, you could argue, is not at his best. Does he need a break? We could maybe talk about that if you like. So, of course, there are issues, but we're creating loads of chances. And teams are not having that many chances against us. So that's the reality of the situation. So that's the other side of the coin, if you like.
Yeah, while I completely agree with everything that you have said, is there a case, Dave, just to play that devil's advocate, that obviously this isn't last season? We can talk about City being the defending champions of these cup competitions and defending champions of the league. And Nigel is right. This isn't a major issue at the club. There aren't major issues. But you always have to keep improving. You can't stand still. And there are some slight chinks in the armour in City's ultimately very, very, very high standards.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I mean, I'd be hypocritical if I said that was what I thought coming in from the season. I thought we'd done some quite useful reinforcement work. I think Rodri was the player we'd been talking about needing, you know, this holding midfield player. You know, Cancelo, I thought, was a useful addition coming in at fullback. You know, we'd maybe strengthen the left-back spot with a bit of strength and depth in Angelino, who has now gone out on loan. You know, I felt that was not showing the complacency and looking that we were going to kick on a little bit. I think, you know, you can make a reasonable case that we maybe should have replaced Kompany with a more senior centre-half, but that, of course, doesn't factor in the big elephant in the room, which being the injury to Aymeric Laporte and Leroy Sané, who are two players. You know, Sané, we don't really have anyone quite like him, and Laporte is the mainstay of our defence. So I think those have been issues. I don't think they excuse everything. I don't think everything's broken. I don't think it's complacency, but I do think that this means that in the summer, certain things are going to have to be reevaluated and certain alternative options have to be pursued.
Yeah, it's definitely not complacency. It's just, and it's certainly not a major crisis or a worry, Nigel, but, you know, it's not been. I think I'm saying it from a point of City's utter brilliance and dominance, that now any time we see a small blip, if we're calling it a blip, being in all four cup competitions and being second in the league, but, you know, losing as many games as they've ever lost in a league, we're only in February, you know, losing a game like yesterday, let's face it, if this was City of last year, as you rightly mentioned, would be 4-0 and absolutely out of sight and trying to get on the earlier train back from Euston home.
Yeah, listen, Charlie, again, I mean, you're agreeing with me and I'm agreeing with you as well. I think it's going to be one of those shows, isn't it, this week?
A stat off.
Exactly. So, you know, you're not wrong in what you say, but it's kind of, you can look at this both ways. You know, we completely dominated that game against Spurs. You know, we hit the post, we hit the bar, we had a penalty saved. You know, in any other game, that could have been 2-3, 4-0 up, and it just wasn't. I think, you know, we had a situation where we then had a man sent off. No argument about that. Two yellow cards. Zinchenko deserved to go. He's apologised to the fans and the club today. And that clearly changed the game. And the impetus swung towards them and they took their chances. But, yeah, it's very difficult to explain what is the difference between this season and last season. We do seem to be wanting to walk the ball into the goal a bit more. I wish someone would just take a shot from time to time. We had the situation that's again being played over and over again of David Silva, who for some reason didn't take a shot and turned and tried to pass it sideways. So there are those sort of situations in games where I'm not quite sure why we're not taking those chances that we were last season, but we're certainly creating them.
Yeah, well, talking of City's dominance, we're going to look at that game with Spurs next, because like we said, it was another dominant display, yet it was no 3 points once again for City.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Man City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with a Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband and Dave Hodgson, leading us forward, talking about City's dominance. And I think maybe me and Nigel might have woke the beast, because Dave is ready to rumble on a few issues surrounding City at the moment. But more importantly, have your say. Will you agree with Dave in a minute's time, or do you agree with me and Nigel? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 07720558. Before we bring Dave in then, because I know you want to talk about a few of the incidents in the Spurs game, we've mentioned the dominant display. We've mentioned, I think, 14 shots before Spurs had won. They scored it. But Nigel, before that, I'm watching the game, cheering City on, not just for because we do the show, but for a few other reasons. We don't need to go into those as well. We mentioned last week, Gundogan, penalty taker. Finally, we found a penalty taker, missed this one. You know, that's how it goes. But out of the last six penalties that Man City have had, they've missed four. What is that, pure luck, coincidence, bad luck, shall I say? What is going on?
Well, it's poor penalty taking for sure. I mean, it's, I suppose, you know, do you give credit to the keeper? You know, you could argue, did he come off his line? But only marginally, fractionally, I think he'd be unlucky to retake the spot kick with how he came off his line. You're right, Gundogan had a 100% record taking penalties for club and country. So when we got the penalty, eventually, after 37 minutes of delay from VAR, but we won't go there today, suddenly we had Gundogan to step up, and you think it's 1-0 City. We certainly deserved to go 1-0 up with the dominance we had, and it was a poor penalty, to be fair. And generally, that's what happens when keepers save penalties. They're generally poor penalties that mean that. Obviously, he guessed right, palmed it away, and then tripped Sterling again. But we didn't get the penalty second time round. I'm joking. But you know, it's one of those things. Penalties. It's a bit of a lottery, isn't it? You know, you're only 12 yards out, but if you stand there with a big keeper, it's maybe not that straightforward. But at this level, we should be scoring more penalties. Someone did come up with a statistic, and I forget exactly what the numbers were, but you've kind of given it in pretty round numbers, and our record is not great, and we need to get, you know, a Yaya Toure. Dare I go back to the 1970s and say Franny Lee, that many of the older listeners will remember. He absolutely scored every single penalty you put in front of him. I think Yaya had pretty much a 100% record. We don't have that at the moment. We've got Jesus who's missed penalties. We've had Aguero's missed penalties. We've now had Gundogan who's missed penalties. Jesus has missed penalties. So, you know, we have got a problem.
Yes, definitely. I think it's around 67% of penalties missed for City. Obviously, you mentioned Sterling then, the follow-up to that penalty. He was involved in another incident in the game. Dave, I want to talk about him. Firstly, Sterling, look, we know if the world-class player is, we know the talent. No, I hope no one is questioning his ability, but he is at the minute facing a drought. No goals in 2020 so far.
I mean, there's two things with Raheem Sterling. You know, not going to deny he's a world-class player. He has always had the issue, though, that he lives in his own head. And you can see that, you know, almost when he was hitting the sort of form we were seeing, you know, towards the tail end of 2019, Sterling was just so balled up on confidence, and that's kind of ebbed away now. He does seem to worry, and particularly the longer he's got to shoot, he does seem to get in his own head a bit there. And, you know, we really saw that in the United game with, you know, the chance he put over the bar after rounding the keeper. I think Sterling is also a little bit of a casualty of the system we're playing as well. For me, you know, when Sterling, you know, some of the moments where Sterling looked good prior to his previous run was when he had Sane on the left, Sterling on the right, and Aguero in the middle. And, you know, if Sane took it left, Sterling had come to the near post, and, you know, vice versa with you know, if Sterling had gone down the right. And that was a very effective setup. I think there's a little bit now that because Mahrez is the other wide option, we're not really playing Bernardo in those wide roles. You know, Sterling kind of is put on the left. He's expected to cut in a certain way. I don't think it necessarily suits his game all that well.
They're nullifying him maybe somewhat.
Yeah, I think he's kind of a casualty of a system at this point.
Can I put one other thing on the table as well? And you rightly said, Charlie, at the start of the season, people were talking about Raheem Sterling as being one of the greatest players on the planet, player of the year material, scoring goals, assists.
And I still believe that. Form doesn't change that for me.
Well, he has gone off the boil, as you say, quite significantly. You know, I have the benefit of seeing him every single week, and Pep is persisting with him. A lot of City fans are calling for him to be rested. He needs a break. And I just wonder, and I just put this on the table, I just wonder if that incident with the England camp where there was a...
I was going to say that.
That's all right. Well, it's all right. This is the agreeing show, isn't it? So we're going to agree on everything here, Charlie.
Yeah, and I can't until Dave comes in.
I can't read your notes upside down. But I just wonder. It just seems too much of a coincidence that his lack of form, his drop in form, has kind of coincided with that, him coming back from that situation, which clearly affected him and other players. It seems to be almost...
absolutely in line with that incident, his form has dropped. And I just wonder, and I don't know, I just wonder whether it's a lack of confidence or something that's affected him following that incident.
Well, the note that I did have, a lot of fans at the time felt Sterling was hung out to dry by England and Southgate and the whole camp. You know, even a former Man United player, believe it or not, Roy Keane, saying this incident happens all the time at football clubs. They're all grown men. You know, this should have been kept indoors. This is from a United player. It wasn't kept indoors. It was made public very, very quickly, and everyone, you know, got to have their say on it. Dave, do you think that Nigel's onto something here, that maybe partly this has played into it for Sterling over the last few games?
I don't think he's completely, you know, like, shot to bits in the way that, like, if that incident had really rattled him. I think he's still trying on a lot of the stuff. You know, he's still very prepared to carry the ball. You know, bringing up that incident in the United game again, you know, he did have the confidence to run at the player, you know, try and go around the keeper, and then sort of panics when he gets in front of goal. He was doing that before that incident.
Yeah, but I think he's trying. I don't think the younger Sterling. I think he's trying too hard. That's where that's the younger Sterling. When Sterling of recent, shall we say, is very efficient, brutal, clinical. Now he is doing one touch too many, one more skill too much. You know, going around the keeper, waiting for that. Whereas before it was just boom, boom. Sterling's free. It's over.
I think it's also a function of the fact people are putting more men on him. I mean, he's also being considered a much more serious threat than, in a way, perhaps, you know, people maybe doubled up on Aguero. You feel Raheem is definitely attracting more of that attention as well now. So I can't look at that and say, I think it'd be unfair on him to say that what is, in the grand scheme of things, a minor incident in a national training camp that's broadly been washed out is actually what's bothering him. I think
he's... Are you sure you passed that fitness test, Dave?
I think he will find that form again. He just needs a game where, you know, a couple of these shots come off. He finds himself, you know, on a hat trick, and he's, you know, looking in that sort of direction. He's a form player, and that's something hopefully he'll get out of with age. I don't think that incident's affected him that much.
Well, there was also another incident in the game. There was a sending off, and Dave, if I'm right, call it a hunch. I know you've got some feelings on this one too.
I do not think for one second that is a red, and I would love to hear whether it's the same people who say that Raheem Sterling should have got a red for that tackle, who are always saying Raheem Sterling's a diver, he's too soft, you know, he goes down, you know, in a light breeze. You know, that is the sign of a committed player who wants to win the ball. And also, Dele Alli is going to go in for that ball 100%. Raheem knows Dele Alli well from England days. They, you know, they know what each other are about. They're both going to go in and try and win that ball properly. You look at it. He's looking at the ball. He's not looking at the man. You know, he's not trying to he plants his foot straight down into the, you know, goes down the turf. You know, he doesn't try and put, you know, like, stick it into the guy. He's looking at the ball. The whole way he positions is trying to win the ball. And you also saw between the two players, didn't, you know, really kick off afterwards, a little bit of words. Nah, that's not an incident for me.
Well, it's at times like this, I wish we could go to, I don't know, say, a current referee in the game. Nigel, I'm not sure if you know anyone, but just to get your thoughts on it, what did you make of the Sterling incident and obviously the Zinchenko sending off?
Yeah, I think having cameras and so many cameras at football grounds is a great thing. It's a great innovation. We see things we haven't sort of seen normally in days gone by. Having said that, slowing things down, showing these incidents slow down, I don't think helps very much. When you see this in real time, and to be fair to Mr. Dean, he was pretty close to the action, you see it real time, it's a late challenge, he clearly went for the ball and caught the man, and I can understand why he got a yellow card. Interestingly, VAR looked at it as well, and again, confirm that decision. I think, sadly, when you slow it down, you do get a slightly different impression of the challenge. I think, interestingly, that Dele Alli's come out today, and you could argue he would say this, but he's been very complimentary about Sterling. He's not that sort of player. These things happen in a game. They shook hands at half-time, had a chat about it at the end of the game. So I genuinely believe there was a genuine attempt to get the ball. I don't think he went out to get the player. It wasn't an over-the-top challenge. He just mistimed it, and you've got to give credit to Alli, who has just got there fractionally before Sterling did. So in my view, Mr. Dean on this occasion got it absolutely right, and VAR backed him up.
Oh, well, there you go. And what about the actual sending off, Dave? Any thoughts on that? Did you agree or disagree?
It's hard to disagree with the sending off itself, But I think we have to address a broader problem in the system that we run. And it's the slightly unspoken truth of pretty much any Pep Guardiola team I've ever seen. And that is that tactical fouling is a strategic part of the game to break up a phase that looks dangerous. Now, the beauty of this is they're usually quite good at rotating who the, you know, the malfeasor is going to be who breaks up the play to make sure that you don't run the risk of someone getting sent off. And clearly something, you know, in a game where quite a lot of things unexpectedly went wrong, Zinchenko should not have found himself in the position where he was having to make that sort of tackle twice. You know, he should not have been the guy who found himself in a position having to break up that play. It's a little bit of naivety from him for still going in for that, because it's not a time in the game where you want to be, you know, it's not like, you know, this is, you know, the last minute and it's worth taking the tackle. You know, there's still a lot of game to be played. He needed to get back into that. But I think when you've got those sort of systems, it should have been incumbent on someone else to come across and do that. He should not have made that tackle, but someone else should have been in that position to
make
that.
Can we just remind ourselves, it was a dreadful corner in the first place that led to this. We're not great. We had David Walker, our good friend, great friend of this show, David Walker, red but never red, came on here and gave us a fantastic analysis of City's sort of corners, past and present. And it was another dreadful corner, straight to Harry Wink. So off he went. And you have to think, where did Zinchenko, already on a caution, and again, quite right, he got involved in an incident he didn't need to get involved in. I think the assistant referee kind of explained to Mr. Dean what had gone on, got some booking in that incident. And then it was on the halfway line. It's a long way out from goal, and he didn't need to do that. I thought he showed a bit of naivety, wasn't necessary. And in my view, it's absolutely a red card all day long, second yellow, red card. And I thought he showed a bit of naivety, knowing that he was going to go if he did that. And it was a deliberate attempt to take him out.
It's an interesting one, showing a bit of naivety there. It's interesting what is going on. Obviously, it's a decision that then affected City for the rest of the game, losing to Spurs. Well, delighted to say, next after the break, John Stapleton, legendary broadcaster and City fan, will be joining us to give his thoughts on the season so far.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sports Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with a Man City Show podcast. Nigel Rothband and Dave Hodson talking everything from City's dominance and why they've lost two games on the spin. Maybe what is going wrong? Some of the players showing a little bit of naivety on the weekend. Well, now it is a real coup, not only for the show, but us here at the station. Delighted to say John Stapleton joins us, legendary broadcaster and City fan. John, it's a real treat for us to have you on the show tonight. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. Just quickly, John, how did you and the love affair with becoming a Man City diehard begin?
Well, I'm very flattered by the description. Thank you very much indeed, Charlie. It began in many families. My granddad was at the very first game City played at Main Road in 1923, believe it or not. In fact, he supported them before they even went to Main Road, at Hyde Road. He supported them there. He supported them. My dad supported them. My dad took me along when I was 6 years old in 1952, believe it or not. And funnily enough, our son Nicholas, who's equally obsessive about City as I am, for a birthday present a while ago, dug me out the programme from the first game I ever attended, which was against Blackpool. And my dad took me because it was a fantastic treat anyway, but a special treat because Blackpool had Stanley Matthews playing on the right wing. Can you imagine? We had Don Revie playing for us. We had Roy Clark on the left wing, Jimmy Meadows. And it really was something that stuck out, was live with me for, you know, for the rest of my life. It was I was hooked there, even though it was a 0-0 draw, apparently. I didn't remember that. I looked at it before I came on air. It was a 0-0 draw, but the memory lived with me forever. And, of course, I've been a City fan ever since then.
John, you travel home and away, we know that, and you've seen some of the great teams. And a lot of people make this comparison between, I suppose, the great team of the late 60s and early 70s and this current side. If you had to make that comparison, which is always difficult, how would you describe the differences or the similarities between those two squads?
Well, it's a tough one because some of that team, in fact, several members of that team in the late 60s, early 70s, are now mates of mine, Mike Summerby in particular. And so I don't want to upset anyone. But the team we've got at the moment, until our setbacks of the last couple of weeks, is a remarkable team. Let's face it. I mean, you know, what they've achieved is sensational. And without, in any sense, trying to undermine what was achieved by Mike, by Francis Lee, by Colin Bell, and the rest of them. I think the team we've got at the moment overall is a stronger and certainly more successful team. They've won more, but then they've had more competitions to compete in. So I think they probably edge it. But you know, let's not forget those boys of the late 60s and early 70s, because they, it, certainly in my experience with the first loss, they were the first team to really take City down, to use a cliche, the old glory road.
And of that team, before we sort of come to the present day, of that team in the late 60s, my personal favourite by a country mile, and still is today, even despite the De Bruyne's and the Agüero's and the Silvers, is still the great Colin Bell, who for me is the complete footballer, is an absolute idol and hero of mine. And like you, I've had the pleasure of meeting Colin on more than one occasion, and a real gent as well. It's difficult to compare, of course, because of the fitness levels and the pitches in those days and the balls and just the way the game was played. But Colin Bell, does he stand out as well for you as kind of probably an all-time great at City?
Oh, completely. I mean, there's a great debate amongst City fans about who was the greatest player we ever had. And it boils down for many people to Colin Bell or David Silva. And, you know, you've got to remember that Colin, and apart from anything else, Colin's career was cut short by that terrible injury which he received in a clash with Buckingham Manchester United. Never really recovered from that. But he was a sensational player. I mean, Nijinsky was an apt nickname for Colin Bell. The complete footballer and a dedicated professional. And as you rightly say, a lovely guy. And remains a lovely guy. He's one of the ambassadors at City now. So I see him every time I go up there, which is most home games. Delightful man and well worthy of the acclaim he's been given.
Sure, the Colin Bell stand, of course, is the one that I sit in every week. In terms of managers, again, the comparison, the great Pep Guardiola will absolutely be a legend at City forevermore. Yeah. But, of course, we're thinking also of that amazing double act, of course. You can't really talk about Joe Mercer without mentioning Malcolm Allison in the same breath. And, again, I'm trying to do that comparison again, but from you've watched City for so long, John. I'd just love to hear from you in terms of how you compare and contrast those two managers, if you like, or those management teams against each other.
Well, I'll let you into a secret. My first job in television after I left Fleet Street was as a researcher and eventually a writer on This Is Your Life with Eamon Andrews. And just for me and my dad, I persuaded them to do Joe Mercer's Life because I had so much admiration for Joe, and we did it. And, you know, he was, another lovely guy. And it was for a long spell anyway until it went a bit sour. It was a great combination of, you know, genial Joe and Malcolm as the coach. They both offered different things to that club and both achieved a great deal. Don't forget when they took over, you know, City were in the second division and they took Manchester City to, you know, the first division title, European Cup, Winners' Cup, FA Cup. I mean, they were a cracking team and they were playing football. I mean, don't forget that game. I'm sure you've seen footage of it. If you weren't there yourself, you probably weren't, but that game against Spurs, that ballet on ice, when they were clapped off. I mean, the Manchester City team were clapped off the pitch by, amongst others, Jimmy Greaves and the Spurs team. They were a fantastic football team, and all credit for that must go largely to Joe Mercer and to Malcolm Allison.
So, John, I'm hearing from all this, you know, this sort of, whilst we have so much admiration for these players back in the day, you know, there has been a real change, you know, on the pitch and certainly in the way the club's run over the last few years. How have you seen those sort of changes manifest in the fan base? How do you feel that, you know, those changes in the club have sort of reflected on the fans themselves?
Well, you know, in one respect, Manchester City hasn't changed at all. Most of the people I know who are not City fans, but who go there say, hey, what a nice, friendly place. And it is a nice, friendly place. And it's always remained a nice, friendly place. We still have a terrific fan base. I mean, despite all these sort of insinuations from some people that it's not the Etihad, it's Emptyhad. You know, we have a few seats spare from time to time. You know, it is a tremendous fan base. 50-odd thousand people for most home league games. And they are proper Mancunians too, and I'm not casting aspersions at United particularly, but they are proper Mancunians. And you know, when there are a few spare seats there, that's because, you know, the price of soccer these days, as you well know, is very high indeed for a lot of people, and they simply cannot afford to go there every 3 days, 4 or 5 times in the course of a month. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. And John, just on the current season, it's an interesting one because we can maybe talk about the vulnerabilities that City are having, the few flaws in the side. And yet, as Nigel pointed out earlier on in the show, this is a side that's just reached the League Cup final in the knockout stages of the Champions League, quite comfortably in the top two. But we're talking about maybe not where it's gone wrong as such from last year, but not performing at their usual high standard. For you, is there any reason why? It's a million-dollar question, John, I know, but for you, can you put your finger on why?
I can't. No, I wish I could. I really can't. I've got to be honest, I cannot. I was at Spurs at the weekend and scratching my head with a lot of people. I was at the midweek game against United. Again, scratching my head. It's essentially the same players. They are, in my view anyway, certainly the most talented squad in the Premier League. And I know Liverpool have done well and very well, and congratulations to them. But the City squad is, in my view, the most talented squad. And why are they not performing as well this year? I have no idea. But I watch those games, like the Spurs game, you know, so frustrated like so many fans, having all that possession and not putting the ball in the back of the net. And as soon as the opposition get into our half, they score a goal. It's weird. I mean, we've had a bit of bad luck. VAR's not always, you know, worked in our favour, but that's true of other clubs as well. We've had some injury was very damaging to Manchester City. We've had some bad luck hitting the bar, hitting the woodwork from time to time. But at the end of the day, we shouldn't be losing, you know, in the way we have done. We drew with Crystal Palace, only drew with Newcastle United. You know, we shouldn't be losing 6 games in a season more than we lost in, I think, 2 seasons together in the previous years. It's unfathomable to me, but maybe it's just one of those things. Maybe, you know, it's how things go and maybe we'll recover. We've got West Ham up next, so sorry, West Ham fans, maybe you'll pay the price.
We're going to be talking about that next, actually, John. Before you go, finally, throughout your broadcasting and journalistic career, you must have met lots of different City legends along the way. I'd just be interested if you could pick one of your favourites or a favourite story from one of those legends. Let's just hear that from you.
Well, Somerby's my mate and my favourite. I mean, well, I met Somerby because after many years admiring him as a fan from the terraces, he's a family lawyer, actually, who came into contact with him. He was flogging shirts at the time, some of it. I mean, he had his own brand of shirts, and he was flogging some shirts to our family lawyer. And our family lawyer said, "You should go and see John Stapleton. He'd fall hook, line, and sinker for this because he's a massive City fan." And of course, Somerby came to our house. My mum and dad, who were still around at the time, were there. He charmed the pants off them both. I bought 6 shirts without even looking at the material, flogged me a couple of books and a video, and went home again. And he's been a mate ever since. Not only that, he used to come down for a bowl of my good wife's very special homemade soup from time to time to bring me even more shirts and play football with our son Nicholas. So, and he's never forgotten that. He's a lovely, lovely guy. And you know, now the sort of chief ambassador at Manchester City, and you couldn't possibly wish for a better one.
John, a real genuine delight and pleasure to get you on. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time, hearing your wonderful insight into meeting the players and the anecdotes there. We wish you nothing but the best, and hopefully we'll get you on sooner in the season. John Stapleton there, legendary broadcaster and, of course, diehard City fan. Great to hear what he says. But once again, Nigel, just coming up trumps. Every week we get someone on in some way connected to City, but a wonderful, wonderful guest. And next, we are doing a guest of sorts, but this time not City connected, a West Ham guest, West Ham journalist Hayden Smith-Shepherd will be joining us to give us the opposition view of the game on the weekend.
Love Sport. The opposition view on Love Sport.
That's right, it's time for the opposition view. You're listening to the Man City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with the Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband and Dave Hodgson. What a delight that was for us there, hearing from the legendary broadcaster John Stapleton all about his time as a City fan and the things that he has seen, and a connection with most of the players he now calls mates. Unbelievable stuff. Really pinch yourself stuff as a fan. But we turn our attention to the game on the weekend. City looking for that win after 2 defeats on the spin. Maybe the perfect time then to face West Ham, who've been really pulled into that relegation fight. A man to tell us more is Hayden Smith-Shepherd. Hayden, really good to get you on. Obviously, West Ham, it's not good at the minute. The situation they find themselves in, one all too familiar, in real trouble, perhaps in maybe going down 3-1 up on the weekend, drawing then 3-3 with Brighton, and now it is Man City. It just doesn't get any easier. What are you making of it?
Well, couldn't come at a worse time to play Manchester City, that's for sure. They're probably licking their lips. I mean, a fired up City team against a hapless West Ham team is just it's not a recipe that any West Ham fan was looking forward to. But not only that, we've got Liverpool and City as our next game. Well, you know, City first, then Liverpool. So probably both games write offs, but you know, maybe it is a good time to play City. Maybe I'm completely naive and wrong. Who knows? But yes, well, we'll soon find out on Sunday, that's for sure.
So, what are you looking forward to coming to the Etihad then? It's a situation that we haven't enjoyed for a while, sort of losing two consecutive games, not putting our chances away. Do you realistically think you've got a chance coming to the Etihad? Where does your best chance come of beating City?
Oh, there isn't. And quite frankly, there's not a chance we'll beat Man City, I don't see, on Sunday. Not with how we defend. I mean, if you can't see out a win at a 3-1 lead at home to Brighton, I can't see us getting anything out of the City game. Domestically, Liverpool at home, I think the scoreline actually flattered Liverpool quite a bit, to be fair, because we limited them to few chances, as it were, considering how free-flowing they are. Maybe if the players are a bit fired up, we could hope for a draw.
We're going to try calling back. I don't know. We're having signal problems there with Hayden Smith, Shepherd, journalist, West Ham journalist. Or maybe just after saying that City are definitely going to win, he doesn't even want to talk about that game any longer. Not, you were armed with questions, wasn't you?
I was. Nigel? I mean, the interesting thing, I mean, Hayden was saying, I mean, they play City and then Liverpool. But, you know, actually, the 6 of the next 7 games, I think it's Arsenal, Wolves, Spurs and Chelsea are the next. I mean, it really is looking
grim.
Really grim for them. I mean, they've found themselves in the bottom three and they've then got that run of fixtures coming up. It is does not looking bright at all. And you can't think of, you know, other sides around them who are, I think they're doomed. I think they're down.
Really? Well, this is it. And you mentioned the run they now face. And Dave, on that run, you mentioned the games in and around them. Brighton on the weekend, 3-1 up, 3-3. West Ham fans are absolutely up in arms.
Well, it's an odd one. I've always been a little bit sort of curious on West Ham because obviously when they had Pellegrini, a manager we know very well, someone I was certainly a big critic of for having one plan, and any time there was any deterioration in that plan, he was never able to really come through and change that. I think, you know, to be honest, I struggle to see what David Moyes can really bring to the table that's going to help them this time around. You know, they've got, but that said, you know, A, it's a club I like. It's a club that's always had a good sort of affinity. You know, City fans and West Ham fans have often had a good sort of affinity and got on very well. But they're also a club with some fantastic creative players. You look at, you know, Felipe Anderson, Pablo Fornals, you know, there's some really good creative players in there who have the ability to get them out of it. But it's whether, you know, Moyes can go into that dressing room, get an organisational structure that's going to work for that. I think we're probably playing them at quite a good time because I think it will take time to drill them into that, and it might be quite a good opportunity for us to try and build up confidence against a team that are, you know, actually in a slump, whereas we've just got a little bit of jitters. I think it's a chance for Guardiola to maybe try a couple of tactical tweaks, that maybe release Sterling a little bit more, maybe brings Garcia back in, maybe he looks to change the composition a little bit in midfield to make us a little bit more creative, take the shackles off a little bit and try and get that sort of, you know, buccaneering, swashbuckling confidence that we saw when we were, you know, really taking teams apart last season.
There was one player you didn't mention who I hope plays, a City legend, and we've used that word a lot tonight, but Pablo Zabaleta, I loved as a City player. Played, you know, he'd sort of bled sky blue, that man, and would run his heart out for the team, would run through a brick wall, and I just loved him. And I hope he's there, he'll get the reception he deserves, and we'll sing the Pablo Zabaleta song all day long.
Well, now in claret and blue, so still the blue is bleeding through him, but West Ham fans haven't been let's say, in united praise of his performances so far, saying that, you know, he is about 500 and his performances are starting to show. A former man that you knew well as well, obviously, Nigel. They had Pellegrini at the helm. He was sacked. Didn't work out for him at West Ham. They're a club, though, in complete contrast to City. We talk about how brilliant City's board have been in the team behind, and Roger coming on, and the strengths and the weaknesses, as of you, Dave, everything that that team and that family have done for that club. West Ham and the Golden Sullivan, even today, more pundits coming out saying the job they have done has not been good enough. We're seeing West Ham protests, and you now, Nigel, saying they are doomed. They are down.
Well, that's kind of partly why I say it. You know, when a club struggles not just on the pitch, but you have the boardroom problems as well, you've got fan protests. And again, I don't know if you heard, but police are looking for three West Ham supporters who homophobically abused Brighton supporters on Saturday. And a police spokesman said that when caught, they will be banned from watching West Ham for life. And so far, 34,900 supporters have come forward and said it was them.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What are you turning this show into, Nigel? We teed you up for that joke. I thought, where's
this
young
going?
Nigel Rothband going with this? Unbelievable. I'm glad you didn't do comedy, which would leave that to Dave. Dave, there is a worry, though. Not a worry that, you know, when people ask that age-old question, is it the right time to face West Ham? Is it the right time to face City? You would think, on paper, this is the perfect tonic for Man City at the minute.
Yeah, I would probably say there's something to that. I mean, I would say Brighton are not one of the more free-flowing teams in the Premier League, and they shipped three goals there. I think, you know, there's definite defensive organisation problems there. As much as I like, you know, Diop and some of the, you know, better centre-halves they have, you know, some decent players in there. The organisation's not kind of working out, and they've had big problems with their goalkeeper as well this season, which has been
massive,
been a big issue for them. And don't get me wrong, it's a team I want to stay up. It's one of the teams I always used to enjoy going to, but I think the other issue they've got is going to that ground no longer has that fear factor. I think that's shaken them a bit, and I think
massive.
It's shaken the club's
identity. That move hasn't paid off at all.
But that said, it's at the Etihad. It's a team out of confidence. They may even view this as a little bit of a free hit. So let's go and just see what are those little things we can do. Maybe bring, you know, Bernardo Silva back in and just try and build that creativity again.
And just quickly before I get a score prediction for the weekend, then it is the winter break, the first one introduced into the English Premier League. We know the top leagues around Europe have been doing this for a long time. Some clubs are already on that break. City play this weekend, then have the following weekend off. I'm sure City will be going on to some warm weather training camp destination, no doubt. Nigel already nodded along like he knows. He's the man that maybe he's got a ticket on the plane. But winter break, we won't know until the games afterwards. But when City are challenging on all fronts, going for the Champions League, you know, this is the first time it could really play a part. How vital and how needed is this winter break, Nigel?
Well, it's interesting. We've not seen it before. I'm not sure if I'm a fan or not. And it could go either way, couldn't it? You know, and you make the point already, Charlie, that City could go away, recharge their batteries, opportunity to sort of iron out some of the issues, and they could come back sort of supercharged, ready for this assault on these three trophies that we're in contention for. It could go the other way. You know, it could lose some momentum for some teams as well. So it's a very difficult one to predict. I'm not a huge fan. I'm a bit of an old-fashioned traditionalist, and just like the fact that fixtures come thick and fast. But it's here to stay now, I suspect. It's happening in Europe. It's come here. Listen, it's going to go one of two ways. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, it is only one weekend without football, but it would be interesting, wouldn't it, where after waiting for City to finally win the big one, the Champions League, they do it this year after a season of ups and downs. Everyone will point to that winter break, won't they, Dave, and say, well, that's played a part.
I think it's possible. I mean, you know, as you've probably heard before, you know, I'd scrap the Carabao Cup, although we seem to have...
We needed you last week. We had a very good cup, you know, debate, me and Nigel.
It's but this is the thing, you know, I think there's too much football. I think you see this a little bit, you know. I think I was saying, you know, there's six games we've played since, you know, fans will have last been paid over Christmas. And, you know, people are expected to foot the bill for this. There's a lot of football on. It hits the fans, it hits the players.
And I think, you know, we can do away with a little bit of this. I think the winter break is welcome. I think it should be longer. I think it should be earlier.
Yeah, it's a really interesting bait. Maybe next time when you're both on, we can talk about that. Maybe once the winter break is over. Just quickly then, to round us off, West Ham on the weekend, facing the Hammers. Nigel, a score prediction?
Well, I think City could actually bounce back from these two defeats. I think West Ham are this poor run of form. I think it could be a big one. I'm going 4-0 City.
4-0, Dave.
3-1 City.
3-1 City. Both resounding victories for City. We wasn't expecting anything less. Well, this has been a brilliant Man City fan show with a Man City show podcast. We will be back as we are every week, Monday 9 to 10 on Love Sport Radio. We will see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.